Welcome to the Seek Together podcast, presented by Dow. Together, we'll discuss how imagining a better tomorrow starts with asking bold questions, having honest conversations, and working together to tackle barriers in technology and in society. This is the Seek Together podcast. Thank you for tuning in.
And welcome to the Seek Together podcast, where we talk about the importance of collaboration to solve challenges and make progress in the space of product innovation, sustainability, digital, and certainly also in the space of inclusion. Today, we'll discuss what is needed to achieve a more inclusive workplace model, hopefully setting an example of what is possible when employees are empowered and both included in and leading conversations about the future. We'll be joined by Alveda Williams, Corporate Director of Inclusion at Dow, and Kevin Martin, Chief Research Officer at the Institute for Corporate Productivity, I4CP, the leading research firm focused on discovering the people practices that drive high performance. Welcome, Alveda and Kevin. It is such a pleasure to have you on the Seek Together podcast. To kick off this episode on the power of inclusion, I'd like to hear more about each of your backgrounds, a little about yourself, what inspired your career path, and what led you to your current position. Alveda, why don't we start with you?
Sure thing. Thanks so much, Eva. It is good to be here with you. And it's interesting, you know, if I think about it next month, actually, I will be able to say officially that I have enjoyed a 20-year career with Dow.
Congratulations. That's wonderful.
Thank you so much. It's interesting. I am actually a PhD chemist by training, and I spent, Eva, with some, I would call it the first decade of my career in research and development before making what some would call the quantum leap over into the HR space. And so I'm probably going to answer the question that you're thinking, and that is, how in the world then did you end up in HR? I can tell you that I certainly didn't plan it that way, because there's really no real reason that any human being would go take graduate level statistical mechanics if they didn't have to. But seriously, I was having the time of my life. I was enjoying my career in R&D, but I realized, Eva, that I was always bolting on this extra stuff that I would say played to this secondary passion of mine around the business of people. I was at a point in my career where my experiences and my skills and perhaps my passions were intersecting. And it was really a single step into HR now 10 years ago that paved the way for the role that I have now, as you introduced, as Dow's Corporate Director of Inclusion and also the Head of Talent Acquisition. And so I have been a part of or leading the journey around inclusion for our company for the last 5 years. And, you know, I'll tell you that we have made a lot of progress to be proud of, but we always know, Eva, that we've got a lot more work to do. And so I always say that I couldn't be more proud of Team Dow for our progress, yes, but for continuing to live boldly and being unapologetic messengers of our culture and our values. One of the things that I have to remind us is that we don't have the answers. We don't have all of the ideas ourselves. And so I am always grateful to know that we're not on this journey alone. That we've got incredible partners, and one of those partners is here on the call with us today, I4CP. And we'll hear from Kevin, but we have been in formal partnership with I4CP since 2020. You've introduced them. They are the leading authority on next practices for human capital. Dow, we work with them specifically in the areas of culture and leadership and talent. They provide for us resources, expertise, and research. And one of the things that I love most is their interactive networks and communities that provide us a platform to learn from other companies and organizations and a mechanism to share the Dow story. Eva, I'll just say that I often say in this work that the rising tide lifts all boats. And I4CP for us has created a link for us to imagine a little bit better, not just with their organization, but with the partners that they help to connect us with.
Okay, Alveda, I got to say, and I don't know if it's true for the listeners, but I have the chills right now. Spoken like a true PhD, you're always in search of better, you're always in search of more, and you want to involve yourself in those partnerships to make sure that everyone, the rising tide, will elevate everyone. So thank you so much for that. Kevin, she just gave you a great segue, but tell us about yourself and I4CP.
Oh, thanks, Eva. I appreciate it. And now, Alveda, thank you so much for this opportunity to be with you on this. This is such an honor and privilege. About I4CP, we are a pure human capital research firm. As Alveda said, we study the people practices of high-performance organizations, and we've been doing that for decades. And we're not a vendor-sponsored research firm. We're not a research firm that does research to sell consulting services. We study more, we do more research in human capital than any firm that we know of, and we're constantly correlating what we find in our research around people practices back to 3 to 5 year trends in revenue, profitability, customer satisfaction, and market share. So we're really looking at HR and the people side of the business through the business lens. It's not through the lens of anything else. And so what we're trying to do is provide the numerous things, Eva, that Alveda and Karen, any business executive who's dealing with the talent side of the equation, which is so huge, we're trying to help them really cut through the chaff and really get to this, the core things that matter most. I came to I4CP. It'll be my 10-year anniversary next month or in October. And I was recruited by the CEO, Kevin Oakes, who he and I were on the speaking circuit together. We'd run into each other and we appreciated each other's research. But what I appreciated is he could jab me in a way that never came across as offensive or defensive. And I could do the same to him. We were just constantly pushing each other and challenging each other, but in a very respectful and fun way. And I just thought, goodness gracious, I mean, this would be a fun ride. And it has been. It's been great.
I have to say this. I hope you caught it. Kevin said that he was recruited by Kevin. And one of the things that you'll find if you work with I4CP is that they're like seven Kevins, right?
The Kevin.
So Dow is encouraging them. You got to be more inclusive because it feels like you have to be a Kevin to work at I4CP.
We need an Alveda. Well, if you haven't been bestowed a PhD already, I'm about to bestow one on you, Kevin, just because an honorary PhD, you can hear the passion in your voice. And I know that you've done the research to prove it. So thank you so much for that. As I just mentioned, you are both experts in this. So you are all aware, both aware, and everybody probably listening, that COVID really just accelerated the change in employee priorities. It has become that much more important for folks to work for value-driven organizations like Dow and find connection and purpose in their careers. As soon as we started to figure out how to deal with the Great Resignation, now quiet quitting came to the fore. Alveda, I would love to hear from you. How does inclusion play into these conversations?
Yeah, listen, I mean, if I think about where the workforce is going, and I hope I'm answering your question, right? You know, if you look at the research, what it will tell you is that in the next few years, I think about more than 75% of the workforce is going to be millennial or Gen Z. Uh-huh. You're talking about the most diverse generations to date. And so if you take this fact, Eva, combined with what has been a dramatic shift in employee expectations over the last few years, it means that companies absolutely have to be thinking about not just the workforce and the diversity, but what it means to create a workplace that is ready for that diversity, one that respects and values their unique needs, their perspectives, and their potential. And here's what we know, based on what we've heard from our own employees, from job candidates, based on what we've learned from partners like I4CP, that this is a generation that they want to do meaningful work. They want to be able to deliver the innovation. They want to be able to deliver for the business. But they also, they want more flexibility. They want focus on health and safety and well-being. And you mentioned COVID, and I think COVID-19 certainly shed a spotlight on that. They're looking for companies that are proactively thinking about how they impact the environment. And they're also unapologetic about wanting to work at a place that is committed to the work of inclusion, diversity, and equity. And so when I hear those things or read those things, I kind of get excited because the good news for Dow is that these are things that are perfectly in line. They marry perfectly with our ambition as a company, which is to be the most innovative, customer-centric, inclusive, and sustainable material science company in the world. And so to answer your question, Eva, about the role of inclusion, I think, look, the diversity is coming. And I always say that we cannot reap the full benefits of that diversity without an inclusive culture. And so for us, it's also about realizing the most diverse workforce. And so one of the things that I4CP has been helping us on is what do we need to do to make sure we embed equity into our policies and practices to make sure that we have equal opportunity and valuable participation for all. Kevin mentioned Karen S. Carter. She duels as our chief HR officer and our chief inclusion officer. And one of the things she says often is that if you really want to have the best team, right? And I just think the best team is the most diverse team. You have to have fair tryouts. And I would add to that, if you want to keep the best team, you have to have a culture where those individuals on that team feel valued, they feel welcomed, and they feel a sense of belonging. And that's really the work that we're after. And we continue to focus on it now.
Bravo to that. You know, I actually recently learned of some research that indicates that even if a person doesn't agree with a corporate policy or practice, they are more likely to buy in if they felt included in the decision-making process that led to that policy or practice being implemented. So to your point, if you'll get commitment, you'll get that loyalty is what I think I'm hearing you say, if you really provide for equity and inclusion in the workplace.
Yeah, they don't have to understand everything, but if they believe that it was fair, to your point, you get the buy-in.
Absolutely. So, Kevin, Alveda speaks about inclusivity in the workplace and that she also uses your research to inform how they make sure that they make these equitable practices within the organization. I would love to know the statistics. Well, and Alveda likes statistics too. She was a PhD for crying out loud. What would you say is the connection between these inclusive practices that Alveda just spoke of and overall organizational performance? And how important is it that we quantify that impact? And can we do it in this sort of amorphous space of DE&I?
Yeah, it's really interesting, Eva. I think a lot of people struggle with quantifying inclusion. In fact, I was listening to a webinar just the other day through the London School of Economics, and you know, they were talking about ESG sustainability, and there was a tremendous discussion around that. And so many organizations struggle with actually quantifying inclusion. And frankly, at the end of the day, what we're talking about here is a culture play. And you know, an inclusive culture, and we basically wrote the book on culture change. We call it culture renovation. And our CEO took our groundbreaking research on it and turn it into a bestseller book. But basically, what we know from our research is that an inclusive, diverse culture has a very strong positive correlation to our market performance index. This is a multivariate, index that we look at that I referenced earlier, which looks back the last 5 years, 3 to 5 years of revenue, profitability, customer satisfaction, and market share growth. And so we know that that matters. All of our research on inclusion always points to things like that. It points to the ability to drive greater innovation, et cetera. But what I want to do is I want to kind of paint a bigger picture here, because the bigger picture, if you look back at culture, our research has been very, very clear, especially through the pandemic and coming out of the pandemic into the endemic stages here, is that it really is about culture over things like compensation. Compensation, of course, matters. An organization, if they're not paying a fair and equitable wage, shame on them. I mean, they've got to reimagine their leadership team. That is table stakes. The difference maker are things that drive for greater, the culture that these that I would argue it's workers of any generation right now. And Alveda's right. There's a huge generation of millennials, et cetera, that are coming through the pipeline, et cetera. But it's flexibility around work. And flexibility around work requires intentionality. There is no doubt about that. And intentionality, and I like to think this, there's a lot of focus at Dow on intersections. And one of the intersections that we clearly see is the intersection of intentionality and inclusion. If you want to be an inclusive organization, you've got to be very intentional about certain things. And so one of the things I'd like to point out there is this. We believe this so much, we wrote a report on it, and it was picked up by the Financial Times and featured by the Financial Times last summer. We believe there's a new corporate currency. And the new corporate currency, I'm not talking about, you know, delayed billing or getting, you know, accelerating payments. What we're talking about is the ability of an organization to recruit and retain the talent it needs for its organization going forward. And there's three factors to it. The first is your purpose, why you do what you do. And to Alveda's point, you've got to be looking way beyond the balance sheet and looking at, you know, the communities in which you operate. And I know Dow does, because you take a very holistic approach to sustainability, which is really, really impressive and right on. But it's your purpose. Does that resonate with the talent that you seek to attract and retain? Your culture. Does your culture reinforce that purpose? If you're talking about, you do, we want collaborative environment, an inclusive environment. How does your culture reinforce that? And because if your purpose is that resonates and you can deliver on that through your culture, then your brand, how your employees, how your customers, how your suppliers, how they interact with your firm, how they talk about you and experience your firm, your brand is going to be very, very solid. If not, your brand is going to suffer. It's going to devalue your shareholder equity as well. And that's very difficult to recover from. That's a long-winded response, but I hope that's makes sense.
Yeah, no, it totally does. And so, Alveda, I actually heard also that purpose has replaced, I know we have to pay a fair wage, but purpose has replaced income and even geographical location in terms of the number one factor that folks are looking for in employment these days. I know you, it's really for everybody, but in particular, millennials and Gen Z. I know that Dow is very committed to their people and to responding to this, you know, need for purpose. How, tell me a little bit more, because we're on this podcast to share, and we hope that the folks who are listening, they share with us as well. How is Dow applying these people-centric principles to really create a workplace that people want to be a part of? Give us some specific examples, especially in light of the hybrid work environment that a lot of people are dealing with.
Yeah, so I would offer to you that we have at Dow, Eva, a pretty long history in terms of leading in new and creative and unexpected ways. And, you know, you talked about being 125 years old, right? You don't get to be a 125-year-old company without that. And so that's how we tend to think about the work and our approach to inclusion and diversity and equity as well. And there are a number of things, a number of examples that perhaps I could speak to, but I would say that one of the things that I just believe sets us apart in terms of our people and our culture is our employee resource groups. Mm-hmm. Of course, many companies have ERGs, but at Dow, they're really core and central to our strategy because we think about that R, right? The R indeed stands for resource. And so ERGs are for us, yes, a resource for the company, but they're also a resource for our employees. And I bring that up because we've actually proven out the business case, and I believe we've shared this with I4CP. We know through our own annual employee opinion survey that we call Voice that those employees that actually participate in at least one employee resource group, they actually experience an overall satisfaction that is 10 percentage points higher than non-ERG participants. Like, that's a real data point. And so you might ask, well, why is that? It's because these ERGs, they provide a sense of belonging. And I've talked a little bit about that. They provide a platform for development and growth, of course. They now create space for courageous dialogue and conversations that companies weren't having before. Absolutely. And importantly for us, and Kevin mentioned this, really for us, the ERGs are about being partners for the company and business success. And so one of the things we do in terms of activating our ERGs is we activate them around the priorities of our company. This year, we actually, Eva, we created this thing called an ERG agenda. It really is basically a North Star, if you will, for our people. And so our ERGs know, like, if you know kidding want to help the company be successful, consider those things that are important to the company, right? You know, what is your ERG doing to promote well-being? What are you doing to help us win the war for talent? How can we activate the ERG as a place for education around the company strategy, which for us this year is about decarbonization and growth? How can the ERG be a connection to diverse suppliers, right, to help us accelerate our strategy around supplier diversity? We also think about how can the ERGs help us to remove the barrier to participation because we believe in the business case. So how can the ERGs help us to remove the barriers to participation for engagement for those people who may be in jobs that are unlike mine or Kevin's, right? Maybe they're running the plant and they just can't leave the asset to go to an ERG engagement. So we're thinking about that. But the one example that I'll share with you is, you know, the things that we ask our ERGs to do around supporting our all ERG conference, Emerge. This conference is pretty fascinating. We were really excited this year, Eva, to bring it back for the first time. So in May of this year, we hosted the Emerge conference for the first time since COVID-19. And I think that this is just from a people centricity perspective, this is just a great example of getting it right with respect to inclusion. And so imagine with me, like imagine a business meeting where everybody who is there wants to be there. I don't go to many meetings in Dow like that. Imagine that. Yeah. A business meeting where everybody wants to be there. And we know that because in order to attend, you have to self-nominate. You have to go through this clean selection process. Imagine a business meeting where you have 500 people who show up in person and thousands of others online virtually, but 500 people who get to come together in person, the most diverse group of people you can imagine. They represent 30 plus countries, all different job types. They represent every dimension of diversity, all of our ERGs coming together for a purpose, to learn more about the strategic direction of the company, to be inspired by, of course, internal and external speakers. I4CP was represented there this year, to be galvanized by powerful stories from their colleagues, to connect and learn from colleagues that they may have never met but for this conference, and to be able to give back to the community through volunteerism. And so they come and get what I would call is a premier employee experience, and then they're charged with taking that back into the respective businesses and functions and regions to help activate the rest of the organization. It really is. I mean, there are a number of examples I could have shared with you in response to your question, but I think this one really is a true example of what is possible when our employees are really empowered to listen, to lead, and to learn.
It's just amazing to hear you, Alveda, because your passion is so apparent. I have talked to other executives at other companies who, when I reference ERGs, it's not like it's a new thing. They'll say, oh, yes, I think we have them. And that's kind of like the typical response, but I can hear that you are invested in them, that you know all about them. You're even testing outcomes from them, which shows your commitment to them. So it's not enough to have something. It's you have to make sure that you are in charge of making sure that everyone else takes advantage of them, that they're encouraged to get involved, and that there is this inclusiveness feeling all around. So I love everything about that.
Listen, I always say that, you know, ERGs can be fun, and they're fun in a lot of companies. Yeah. And I say at Dow, we do a lot of things that are fun.
Yeah.
But not just for fun, right? It is, to your point about the outcomes and really delivering through everything. And the ERGs are just one example, delivering sustainable, meaningful, and visible progress for our people.
Amazing. Yeah, Eva, let me just jump in real quick. Please. Just to add from a research standpoint, we everything is Alveda is saying right now, we have seen so much echoed in our research. And we really, I personally think this is something that I think can really be a great strategic advantage to Dow, because we wrote a report that we ended up titling The Hidden Value of ERGs. And basically, what it came down to is we found a next practice. That means ones that's rarely adopted, but very strong impact to bottom line performance and top line growth, was where ERG sponsorship or involvement for leaders was a requirement as part of their development program, actually into succession, et cetera. And look what you've got. I think it's 98%, Alveda, right, of your leaders that are in ERGs, which is phenomenal. And so you've already got that there. And what's so great about it is the ERGs really allow an organization, allow these leaders to experience, you know, one of our co-founders, Jay Jamrog, likes to say inclusion's a contact sport. And what that means is you've got to be able to experience difference in order to appreciate it more. And this is a great learning tool to be able to not only experience, but also learn and understand. But even just as importantly, it's build relationships. And we did a very significant study on the leadership behaviors that matter most in this new era of work. And the single one that had correlates, positive correlates to every single dependent variable we looked at, which included our market dependent variable, was around building relationships with people from underrepresented groups. Mm-hmm. And so this is a vehicle that allows you to do that, but this is really important for leaders to step out of their comfort zone and really get acclimated and establishing those types of network ties as well.
Okay, that is great information. If we know that having diverse bodies of people in an organization is helpful for that organization, it makes them more productive, has better outcomes in the long run. And we know that once you're at a place like Dow, you're going to feel that. You're going to feel that inclusion and the diversity and equity. I want to know from you, Kevin, how do companies go out and recruit talent? How does inclusion play a part in how they recruit talent? How do they speak to them? What are they looking for? Tell me a little bit about, so as to advise the folks out here who then want to go capture that talent and become an organization like Dow, how do they get those people?
Yeah, well, first off, it's a great question, Eva, because we just did a study this past summer with Fortune Media, and we ended up titling the study The Talent Imperative, and it's because You know, in Fortune studies of CEOs for over the last year, the talent, the labor skill shortage piece is one of their one or two highest focus areas that they believe could be the biggest disruptors to their business in the coming year. And so what we asked in that particular survey, one of the questions was, what are the employee value proposition elements? So an EVP is pretty much the promise that an organization makes to potential workers and its workers to say, hey, in exchange for your commitment to us, here's what we're going to give to you. And what we found is that the element with the greatest differentiation between high performance organizations and low as an element of EVP that's proven to attract talent is commitment to diversity, inclusion, and belonging. The number one element was flexibility in work arrangements. Now, I would argue that these go hand in glove. And so how does an organization demonstrate that? Well, it's really through action. I think a lot of, like at recruiting fairs, a lot of firms will put up videos of employees that say, hey, I feel great about this, and here's what I've got, and internal mobility and, you know, the opportunity to have continuous development and exposure to different assignments, et cetera, which is great. However, I think the proof comes in the pudding. So for instance, let me give you a couple of examples. I'm thinking about a firm that's based in Europe, very, very, very large consumer products firm. It's Unilever. They have a Breyers ice cream unit that was looking to launch a new flavor in the Hungarian marketplace. And what they realized, and I give them so much credit because this really speaks to the power of inclusivity. Remember what we talked about before? There's an intersection here of inclusion and intentionality and flexibility and intentionality. And so they were very intentional in sitting back and saying, wait a minute, we don't have anyone on this product team right here that has experience or understanding of this particular market. So they were able to both go back inside, and they found someone who was in sales who had that experience and had a desire to be part of that product team. That's inclusiveness right there. That is the power of diverse perspective and thinking, and that's value creation. Every organization that does this right has one thing square in their mind. It's about value creation. And that way you take things like ESG, DEI, and you take them from these acronyms that oftentimes get lost in the shuffle, and you bring them right back to what it's designed to do and what they do when they're done well and intentional. And I'll give you another example. U.S. Steel, their CHRO shared with us recently, U.S. Steel, he came in there, they had a new CEO in 2017. He was their CFO, became CEO. He brought in a new CHRO, and that CHRO and the CEO came together and said, this is how we're going to turn this business around. And they wanted to create a culture of caring. Imagine that, U.S. Steel, a culture of caring. And inclusion and diversity were core to that. And so what they initially, you know, their CEO immediately signed on to certain pledges. A sign-on's one thing, but actions are different. The CEO, the CHRO, the exec team sponsored the pride parades in Pittsburgh. They marched in those. They met with leaders. They went from 2 to 8 ERGs. I mean, I can go on and on, but here's the net result. They went in 4 years from losing $2 million a day in operations to having record financial performance. And if you ask the CEO or the CHRO, it is 100% aligned with their focus on that culture of caring and DEI. So again, it's about value creation.
That's amazing, because it makes everyone feel good and it affects the bottom line. So it's just a win-win-win all around. You know, we have discussed a lot of good stuff here, and I don't want to end on a negative note, but I do want to ask you, you know, in the first episode, we talked about the importance of diversity and inclusion and creating these collaborative and transformative work environments, just like you both are speaking about today. But I would like to touch on what the biggest challenges you see for DE&I for the future. But again, I don't want to end negatively. So what are those challenges? But also, how do we start to resolve them? And what are the opportunities that lie ahead in this space? Go ahead, Alveda.
Sure. Look, I think it's a fair question, and I wonder how much time you have. But listen, I would say that one of the greatest challenges is the obvious one, and that is that the world is in a constant state of change, right? uncertainty and some might even argue crisis. I mean, think about just the last 2 or 3 years alone. And what I've seen as somebody who is, you know, now a practitioner in this space is that when it comes to the work of inclusion, diversity, and equity, like the lines are blurring, the boundaries, Eva, of what is inclusion, diversity, and equity work, you know, the boundaries are expanding. And so as a company, we have to be willing to evolve with those changes and yet remain resilient, be willing to adapt and, you know, to Kevin's point, you know, shift from just commitments to no kidding, taking actions. You know, the other thing I see is that in the work of inclusion, diversity, and equity, the pendulum of transparency and accountability, if I could put it that way, the accountability is swinging, right? And so it's now not just about the expectation of progress around inclusion and diversity that we put on ourselves as a company, right? What our leadership team expects of us, what our board of directors demands of us in terms of how we hold ourselves accountable. But there are a lot of now, dare I say, external watchdogs, right? It's now also about what our investors are thinking about our work in inclusion and diversity, our value chain partners. Kevin mentioned it, job candidates, community members. They're all expecting different things from us as well. They expect progress and they expect us to tell them about it. And so I think we are up for the challenge. We are going to continue the work. It's really about making sure that as the world changes and evolves, that we change with it, yes, but that we're also continuing what we've talked about here today, that we're continuing to care for our people and the communities as their needs shift, that we are making sure our priorities remain rooted in the health, the safety, the well-being, if you will, of our employees and neighbors, that we are doing our part to give back through financial investments, of course, but also volunteerism, and that we continue to look for ways to create forums like this one, to listen, to learn, from our employees, from our community stakeholders, our fence line neighbors, and of course, our partners that we work with.
Thank you so much, Alveda. You know, Kevin, I also understand that the power is shifting and there are multiple jobs for as many employees as there might be. So there is a change in dynamic. What do you think are, you know, the challenges that we face in light of that? Recruiting the best talent. I know Alveda talked about it, making sure that you provide all of these things that make the workplace a place that they want to be a part of. What other advice do you have?
Well, I want to, you know, I'm a pretty simple, pragmatic person at the end of the day, even though I'm exposed and live in research and I love the data. But simply put, again, I cannot stress the criticality of understanding the corporate currency of a firm. You know, you've got to make sure, every firm needs to make sure that what it's putting out there of why it does what it does resonates with who they want to attract and retain. Mm-hmm. And if they want to make it more expansive to attract and retain people that they believe find these things important, they better darn well live those, or it's going to show up in their culture. And those experiences are going to be, you know, think about the power right now of social media. One tweet, one post on a on a Glassdoor or comparably or anything like that has tremendous value degradation associated with it. So I think the challenge is really living, it's being authentic, it's being true to what, it's being convinced that this matters most. And I'll end with this example, and I cannot name this company because this was a conversation I had actually just last week. But I was talking with someone who's in charge of ESG for one of the largest employers in the world, one of the most successful companies in the world. And we were talking about this very issue. And so my question to that person was this, you know, where with the economic uncertainty, with the geopolitical stuff that's going on, with the change of priorities, what are you doing? Because they're doing a very good job of really driving a holistic sustainability agenda with ESG at its core. I said, what's the key here? And he said that this is the key. He said, every year our executive leadership team is getting together and they're doing what we call a priority assessment. And the priority assessment, and I think it happens a couple times a year, is the priority assessment is really, you know, again, setting the priorities of the organization. Everything's rooted in what the business strategy is. So of course, you know, that's table stakes here. But let's say that you have clear understanding what the business strategy is. The next question they ask, and I think this is such a powerful question, is what must be true in order for our strategy to succeed? If this is our strategy, What must be true? And so I'll give you an example, because this is a retailer. Things that they said must be true is we need to deliver value every day to the communities in which we operate. Okay, well, if that needs to be true, what needs to be true to support that? And we had this conversation. We were going layers deep. One of those things is we need eco-friendly products and packages that don't pollute those communities. And we need to support the local communities via local suppliers, right? And so that gets into why a diversity supplier initiative is important and why not to just leave that at the end of the day. The other thing that was really critical, number two out of his mouth, is we need an engaged and thriving workforce who understands our markets. So if you just look at that right there, that puts immediately the priority of ESG, diversity, inclusion, right in the crosshairs. Again, what must be true in order to succeed? And that way, they don't discuss the acronyms. They don't go out there with three-letter words and say, what are we doing around here? It's all around value creation. What are the truths? How are we living against those? And when it comes to reprioritizing, those are always in their lens. I hope that helps.
No, very helpful. Kevin, I got to say, you have done so much work around this space. We really appreciate your expertise. Alveda, I had chills for most of the time that you were talking. Thank you for everything that you do to make Dow this incredible place to work. Thank you both for joining us today, shining a light on the importance of DE&I and what we can all do to face the challenges that lie ahead. This has been a great conversation from my mind. I hope from yours as well. For all of you listening, we have more great content in the episodes ahead. But for now, we want to hear your thoughts about today's episode. Please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you listen on. Thank you for listening to the Seek Together podcast, and we hope you'll join us again next time.
This is the Seek Together podcast. Thank you for tuning in.